Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lily! Exclamation mark. Hi, Lily.
Hi.
That's your handle here on Zoom, and I feel the need to say it with the appropriate fanfare. So it's not just Lily, it's Lily.
I don't really know when I did that for the first time, but that's what Zoom has me as. So that's my name now.
I love it. I like the high energy. That's a good way to start things. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So, of course, everybody, we're here to talk about episode 4 of season 8, Goodbye Radar Part 1. Ooh, that's a big one. But before we get to all, before we get to the festivities, Lily, since this is your first episode, and by the way, everybody, you've already heard, this is the first episode of the season featuring a new guest, so we have to find out, how did you become a fan of MASH in the first place?
I feel like a lot of younger viewers, my parents grew up watching MASH when it was originally airing, and they were obviously both obsessed with it and was on every night. And so growing up, it kind of was just little jokes here and there that they've just had in their minds forever were kind of like common phrases. So like my mom, for instance, basically most days for my entire life has gone, "Ah, Bach," which is from a very, very, very early episode of season one. And somehow that's like, when we started watching it together, I was like, that's really early on. And like, that has been something she clung on to. And then my dad, obviously, he has a pretty harrowing story about not being able to watch the finale. So that was a thing where he's like, one day you'll understand. And I understand now. But yeah, I started watching it with my mom in, I think like February of 2021. Cause I was like, you know what? We don't have anything else to do. Let's start watching this. And, we watched like 3 or 4 episodes a night. And I think we finished at the like end of April. and yeah, it consumed me. And, it's just something I've obviously rewatched it multiple times. And, you know, MASH is evergreen. It just kind of, so much of it is just perfect. I mean, as you know, I don't need to say it to anyone listening or you.
Right. Well, all right. I have so many questions and just in just the brief couple of sentences you gave. First of all, when your mom does the "Ah, Bach," right? I have to know, what is the context for her dropping that into the conversation? Is it related to something, you know, if something like related to like classical music comes up, that would be very specific? Or is it, what's the context? How does she work it in?
Because I don't think she actually had remembered the context. So she just kind of would do which Radar's actual hand gesture when he says "Ah, Bach" is he kind of waves his hand out in a almost like, it's like a sideways, like hand shaking thing. Mm-hmm. She would always kind of stroke her chin. And like, so it's kind of like a contemplative thing. So she, like when she's saying like she understands Bach, which again is not really the context it's used in, but again, that just it's funny because I mean she was a young kid at the time that would have come out, that episode would have come out, and the fact that I mean through reruns and stuff is what stuck with her is just really funny because it's such a small scene in such a like obscure episode. So yeah, that was that, which she still does it, by the way. She has fixed the hand gesture though, so now it is accurate to the show.
That's fantastic. I love it. I had a friend of mine back in grade school, and well, not grade school, like middle school and high school, that loved that episode, and he loved the "Ah, Bach," and he would drop that in when it was the failure to understand something but pretending that you did. So he had the context of it correct, is that it was just like...
Yeah, I think sometimes that's what it's used in, but I think it's just kind of a humoring thing she'll
do. Gotcha. So. Oh, I love it. I love it. Again, imagine the writer that wrote that episode, and you would say, hey, that's going to become a catchphrase in someone's family. Yeah. Half a century later, it'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Exactly.
Okay, so now, not to bring up a difficult subject, but your dad, why did he not get to watch the last episode?
Okay, so he obviously it's a saga in the way he tells it, but the short version and the more accurate version was that basically, he had CCD, which is like some sort of like Catholic school
I went to that,
after
yes.
school. Yeah, the after school, like learning about Catholicism or something.
Yep, that's exactly
And
what it was.
yeah, and so for some reason, my grandparents did not let him skip that night for no reason. And by the way, my grandmother now is like, I don't know why I wouldn't have just let you skip that night. And so anyway, so he had to go to CCD and miss the finale. Of course, he was like, I mean, he must have been like 15, 16. So he was like, and then I was depressed for the rest of high school. And I mean, he wouldn't have seen the episode again until probably, they reran it
They reran it
when
like in
we
the
were able to
summer.
get it. Yeah. And so he doesn't remember when he actually got around to watching it, but it was like years later. And so, and then the kicker of the story, which is already like you just horrible, is that like the next week at CCD, he was talking to the teacher and she was like, oh, I would have just canceled class. Like you didn't have to come. And of course, like that's
Oh,
even worse.
it
And
is.
so
It
that
is.
was always this harrowing thing. And so he'll be like, it's like quote unquote, the worst day of his life. And so
Wow.
every now and then he'll mention it. And as I was growing up, it would be like, okay, whatever. But like, of course, seeing the finale, I would be like, and also the fact that, again, as everyone knows, it was like the thing that happened. So that's even like besides the plot of the episode, it's like missing that event. And so he's justified in saying that is the worst day of his life because I can understand that. I mean, it also kind of says a lot about him, but yeah, no, that's his harrowing story.
Your anecdotes are like tree branches, because now I have three questions about that anecdote.
Yeah, of
Because
course.
first of all, on the one hand, I'm imagining the CCD class is just him and the teacher, because every other kid skipped
Yeah.
it, right? So it's just that's total,
There is follow-up questions that I think have been lost to just him blocking out then the rest of high school. Yeah, there is follow-up things. There was a he had a high school reunion this year, and I was like, were any of these people in that CCD class? Because like I need to like do a reporter thing. I need to get to the bottom of it. Does anyone else have this kind of story? But yeah, there's kind of questionable things. He also has this memory of going to like baseball camp and calling home and hearing the MASH theme on in the back. And he was like, you guys are watching MASH without me.
Wow.
Because again, it's like that's the thing about MASH. It was this like family event and the event that was happening all the time. And so, you could have that missing out. Obviously, the finale is worse than just like a random
Yeah,
episode,
right.
but.
Oh my Lord. And so then the other thing, just as a sort of side road to that, is like when I went to CCD, like a lot of that had to do with sort of like, the church wanting to, for lack of a better term, kind of like, rope in the next generation of Catholics. That's what that they mean. And I'm not saying anything out of school. That was exactly how it was pitched to me. And it's like no surefire way to make a kid hate the thing you're trying to teach them is to make them miss this vital thing that's going to make them part of their generation. Like, no,
And I
you,
will,
yeah, you know.
yeah, I will say that as you said this, I remember I keep a list of like funny quotes that like my parents say and stuff. And one of my dad's quotes is that that night made him not believe in God. I just remembered, yeah. So, which I mean, fair enough, fair enough. There can't be a God if he made you miss MASH. I
Love
mean,
how dramatic your dad is.
oh, so the drama. I mean, to be fair, again, when it's that specific event and you're like 16, it's like,
Yeah,
it's
it's the
over.
right.
It's
It's the
over.
worst thing is to be left out of your, you feel like
It's somehow
your generation's experience.
that's the only thing that's worse than watching that episode is not watching it.
Wow. I love it. That is, I feel so bad for your dad. That's just absolutely brutal. So, okay, one last thing. So you mentioned that you got it from your parents, that obviously it was passed down to you genetically and
Yes, of
environmentally,
course.
because they were that into it. But you said that you loved it, of course. And I don't, it's not of course, because a lot of younger people don't know what this show even is, or if they do, are like, what? That's that whole thing. So Now, obviously, you're a member of Mash Blur, and so you're a diehard, and that group
I'm in
is
there. I'm in there.
it's a self-selecting group. Anyone that's there is obviously a diehard, so therefore those people are the people who would say, "Of course I fell in love with it. Why wouldn't I fall in love with it?" Well, that's again not necessarily the case. What was it as for you to be as a young person to pick up on it? I mean, your parents can watch it, but it doesn't mean you necessarily were going to love it either. What was it about the show that spoke to you as a young person, a full almost 40 years past the show being off the air?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of interesting because I don't think I've ever thought of it like it's like, oh yeah, of course I do. And but I obviously have tried to make many of my friends watch it and they haven't. So I know that it isn't necessarily a given. I don't know. I mean, one, it's such a good show. So it's like for me, it's like it is a given of like, well, I don't know how you can't not like it. You have to give it a chance, of course. But I mean the just the characters, the whole kind of setup and obviously the kind of the notion that a show could hold up so well, as it has, like there's very few things in MASH, to me at least, that don't hold up, which obviously, those are the clear things. But I think, yeah, just the characters and the variety of characters and the different storylines and how it's kind of, again, I think even though I was watching like 3 episodes a night and like every night, that kind of communal feeling of, you watch MASH and it's like, yeah, they're your friends from the TV, which is what I think it's a very the common MASH blur saying is your friends from the TV. But, and I definitely think though, having that kind of community of other people, because when I started watching it, I don't know how soon I found out that, I mean, it was pretty soon because I've been on Tumblr for a while, but that other people I know had also started watching it. Around that time, I think 2020 was Hot Mash Summer, which is again, some people will know what I mean by that. But so I obviously came in 2021, so there was kind of this like burgeoning thing. And I will admit, I have in the past like year or so, I was like, I need to take a break from Mash so I can like then go back in and watch it, for the like sixth time fresh, so you have to take a little bit of a break. But yeah, so I sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought. But so when I got into it, there was that kind of community kind of forming, and it now has, obviously it's very big, on Tumblr and stuff, which I feel like half of that was there, maybe less than half of that was there when I started, but obviously now it's very big. You can kind of tell how far and wide it is, obviously, using, metrics is kind of, I feel like cheap, but like you see like, oh, this post will get like 100 reblogs or whatever. And you're like, oh, there are, it's a very large group now. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, not interesting if you know anything about Tumblr, but like the kind of having that niche and, but finding that group, I think my main thing was, some of my friends started watching it online and stuff. And so we were kind of talking about there, but I have to do a shout out to my MASH Discord friends, the Fiery Liberals from New York, which is an Alan Alda quote. And they were definitely having a kind of, even off of Tumblr, a kind of even more niche group of MASH fans. Definitely you kind of mind meld off of each other. And it's just, yeah, it's just a really interesting community. A lot of us are in, there's a kind of academia sector of MASH fans, which is really interesting.
Yeah,
I think that
that's
goes
interesting.
hand in hand with being into something, that is older, which I don't think it shouldn't be that much of a crossover because like anyone can like things that are not are quote unquote historical, but like it does seem to be like people in like the museum field and the academic sector are very MASH pilled, which I think is interesting because you'll be like, why, wait, all of a sudden all of us are doing this thing specifically. And so yeah, I think just the kind of community of it, and then it kind of that also fuels you wanting to watch. But anyway, I think the original question is why I love MASH, and yeah, the characters, everything, it's just funny, it's just feel good, I mean some of them are feel bad, but
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's all
This
part of it.
episode is a feel bad, I'll
This one
say
is a feel bad, yeah.
that. This is
No,
a
I
feel
mean,
bad episode.
but it's definitely all part of it is that, I mean, obviously, we've talked about this in previous episodes. It will be it's so incredibly ironic that a mass pandemic is probably responsible for more new MASH fans than anything else. You know, it's just
Yeah.
unbelievable that that would be the case. But also, yeah, that there was this community for younger fans to find each other on
Yeah.
because and that's and that and when I say younger, I mean that, of course, you know, literally. I think that's the I'm sure the median age of the MASH Blur and the MASH Discord people is a good 20 years younger than what I am, but also younger mentally. Because and an example I will give is like one of the last things I ever posted up on Twitter before I left it was I don't even know what inspired me to do this. I think it was bouncing off something else. But anyway, I listed all 11 seasons of MASH in my order of favorite to least favorite, right? And you know, of course, when you're doing a list, one of the somebody's got to be at the bottom. It doesn't mean
Yeah,
you don't
it's
like
true.
it. It just means of all these things that you like, this thing is your least favorite. And
Yeah.
so I put season one as my least favorite season because it is. And I literally had people like wishing me dead because of my
Yep,
opinions were so
Well, one, that sounds
wrong.
like Twitter, but also,
But right,
yeah.
exactly. Well, that was one of the things where I said, you know what, I think I'm done with this. And I left. But it's that mentality. Like if people like you had run into that buzzsaw as your fandom was just starting, you might have given it up. You might have been like, oh, is
I
that what
guess
the, is that what,
so,
you know? But
but
you didn't
I
run into
do
that because the
think,
MASH Blur crowd was not that crowd. So when I say younger, I mean
yeah.
younger in mindset of like, my opinion of this show has been locked in stone for 50 years, and I don't want to hear someone else's divergent opinion. And that's not the way you can approach it.
Yeah, I definitely think that that obviously is the case for some people. I feel like for people on Tumblr specifically, I wonder if I don't think there's much that can deter, there's much hate that can deter someone from liking something. So for instance, like that's just so the discourse is so like ingrained in, I feel like especially people of my generation, like growing up, not like with the internet, but basically with the internet and stuff, and kind of, that's just a given with it. Like getting that kind of, if you getting such a big negative response about anything and based on your opinions is kind of par for the course. Just especially when you put yourself out there like that. So I don't know if it would have stopped me, but I definitely think that, like, yeah, the MASHBLR community is very like, I mean, again, I haven't been like finger to the pulse in like probably a year or so, but while I was on like in, I was in there for like for real, like for like 3, 4 years. I never, there was not discourse or there was not like, it was very, yeah, like a respectful, like-minded kind of thing. And, occasionally you'd get someone who, again, would get mad at like, obviously, like a lot of the, like the queer readings of stuff. You'd get every now and then you get someone, but that is also Tumblr where it's like, okay, you're outnumbered here. I'm sorry.
Right. And
Yeah.
something else I've noticed too, is that I just think younger people, by the nature of the fact, God, when I say younger people, I hear how old I sound when I say that phrase. But I also just noticed that people that are younger that have grown up on the internet are better at it because younger people tend to not feed the trolls. And that's the trolls, they want that response. They want that outrage because that's what they live off of. And if you give it to them, even if you tell them what you think, you know, even if you say F off, that they still want that. And I have
There's
found that younger
definitely
people are
that.
just like ignore them and eventually they slink away because they're not getting that dopamine hit that they wanted of outraging some stranger on the internet.
I definitely think that is a kind of difference between sites that are have more like of a younger group but rather than like kind of the Facebook s that situation where I definitely have seen like crazy arguments go on like yeah, like when I'm like trying to look up something specific from an episode and on Reddit or Facebook, just like seething. People are just so mad whenever you mention something specific and like their opinions are like to them are like facts. And so I think that is kind of a distinction, but I do also think that is just kind of a maybe even a generational thing for
Yeah.
some people, because obviously also it's a crazy people on the internet thing,
Yes.
so.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I have mostly weeded out those kinds of people from my social media, but I have noticed that like once in a while I will get a response to something I write, and it's clearly someone who just wants to anger everybody. And
Oh,
I will try to delete that comment as fast as possible because I know some of my friends will then respond to it and they're feeding, and I'm like, it's not what I want. So I just obliterate it and it just stops because it's like it just and a lot of that is people my age are just like, if I just tell this person they're wrong enough, they'll change their mind and they will absolutely not do that.
It's a losing game with
It
that. So I
absolutely
think,
is. Absolutely. So okay, well that all that is fantastic. Your poor father, I really do have, even though I got to watch the episode, I do have sympathy for him. That's just terrible. Tell him that I express sympathy for him
I
here
will.
across
Thoughts and prayers, yeah.
thoughts and prayers. Absolutely. So okay, so let's talk about Goodbye Radar Part One. It originally aired on October 8th, 1979, written by Ken Levine and David Isaacs, and directed by Charles S. Dubin. During a session in OR, the generator goes out, leaving all of the hospital trying to operate in darkness. Klinger finds Zale, who's in charge of the generators, and asks him to crank up the backup generator. The only problem with that is the backup generator's been stolen. Zale tries to fix the main one, but after a few seconds of it chugging along, sparks and smoke begin to fly from it, and it breaks down again. Meanwhile, Radar is stuck at an airport trying to get back from R&R to the 477th, but his spot on the plane is taken by a general who travels with a life-size cutout of himself. It's his Christmas present to his troops, the clerk unhelpfully adds, stranding Radar in the airport's lobby with nowhere to go. Radar is angry at being stuck, but things start to look up when he meets a young, pretty nurse named Patty, who is also waiting for a flight, except here hers is bound for home. Turns out she's from Missouri, in a town just a short drive away from Radar's beloved Ottumwa. They start to talk. Back at the 477th, the lack of electricity really starts to affect the camp, and the doctors have to find old-school workarounds to deal with the wounded. Klinger has assumed all of Radar's clerical duties, but he's hopelessly in over his head. With the food about to go bad, Potter has everyone double up on portions. He even invites all the local villagers to share the food, and they hungry gobble it up, all the food they can get their hands on. Eventually, Radar gets a flight back to the 477th, although now he doesn't want one. He has spent all night talking to Patty, and they've hit it off. She even likes grape knee-high. He tries to get out of the flight, but the airport clerk is having none of it. He orders Radar aboard, and grumbling, he goes. But not before promising to see Patty when he gets home. He even gently kisses her goodbye. Radar arrives back at the 477 like a hero, since everyone assumes he can find them a new generator. Radar is cranky, clearly still angry at being separated from Patty. To make matters worse, everyone is so eager for him to find them a generator that he has to go right to work, not even taking a moment to relax after his long trip. Things get even worse when Radar sees what Klinger has done to his office, i.e., destroyed it. Papers are everywhere, and the office is in total chaos. Radar, furious, orders Klinger out, refusing to let him watch how someone trades for a generator. He calls his old friend Sparky, but there's no generators to be found anywhere. Radar wanders into the O Club, now even more despondent. He admits to Klinger that he's failed, leaving no one quite sure what to do. Meanwhile, Colonel Potter visits the swamp looking for Radar with some bad news. Radar's Uncle Ed has died. Hours later, Hawkeye, BJ, Potter, and Father Mulcahy wait outside Potter's office. Radar emerges, just having talked to his mother on the phone. They talk about what's happened and how tough things are going to be on the O'Reilly farm now that Radar's Uncle Ed has died. Potter agrees and tells Radar that it's time for him to return home. He tells Radar to get out a hardship discharge form and put his name on it. Everyone congratulates Radar, but he's so stunned he doesn't know how to respond. Hawkeye says he's very happy for Radar, and he responds, "Yeah, I'm happy for me too, I guess." To be continued. Okay, Lily.
Man.
This is a very sad episode. There's some good laughs in it, and we'll get to it, but it is overall a sad thing. So let's back up a little bit here. And when you were getting to watch the show for the first time with your mom and dad stuff, what was this? Was it the post-radar era or was it the radar era?
So when we started watching from the very beginning,
Okay. Oh, you're watching in
and
order. Okay.
oh no, we watched in order.
Okay.
I that's one of my biggest, well, my two biggest controversial
All
opinions on MASH are you have to start from the beginning And
That's tough.
I'm a laugh track truther. I think the laugh track adds something to it. I have made posts about this. I have opinions, and that's the hill I'll die on. But everyone, each man for himself. But yeah, so when I was watching, I actually, because it was during COVID and like the lockdown, I was better at keeping a journal. And I basically, because we were watching MASH every night, I would just write a little review of all the episodes we watched. So I dug the journal out, and so I have my review from March 13th, 2021.
Wow.
I didn't write much because by the way, I'm glad I got scheduled to do this episode and not the next episode, because basically I have not rewatched these two episodes since that first time.
Wow.
And so besides this morning is like I think probably like the second or third time I've seen it, like total.
Wow.
Because Radar, favorite character. So it was rough for me. So my only notes under Goodbye Radar Part One are dreading it and cute Radar. So and then the paragraph for Goodbye Radar Two Part Two, I'll obviously don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it's a paragraph and I was not happy about it. I did know he was going to be leaving, just because I think by that time at season eight, I had seen some stuff. I didn't know when or how, so it kind of, was a thing. But yeah, definitely I had to make sure after, let's say, certain things that happened at the end of season three, that Radar was going to be okay. So I think that's how I found out that he does leave eventually, but it's like he's fine, but yeah, no, this episode, it wasn't as bad as the next episode. But it definitely, there are some parts where it's just painful, man. Like it's
So you
just,
didn't want
yeah.
him to go, right? When you were getting to it
No.
on the first run, you were sad to see him go.
No, I was very sad to see him go.
Okay.
And also for which, will kind of it starts happening more at the beginning of season eight, end of season seven, but I also did not like the shift going on around everyone's attitude towards Klinger. Obviously that's a longer conversation, but I did not like the switch they did from him being like what they take out their feelings on him because he's not Radar, and I did not like that. As much as I love Radar, I don't think that him leaving and him not being around as much was an excuse for them to make that turn towards Klinger. And so that was kind of a thing, which you do actually like there. You get into that in this episode, and obviously it gets worse as the seasons go on. But yeah, I definitely did not want Radar to go. I actually have my little Radar teddy bear. He's staring at me with his dead plastic eyes, because I was like, I needed something to commemorate my MASH watch, and I am crazy, so I found one that's very similar on eBay, and so he's sitting here. He's a big fan of the show, so.
Okay. Good to know. I will say, as someone who has been living with the show for 45 years at this point, or even almost 50, I guess, really. I didn't mourn the loss of Radar because I felt like they didn't know what else really to do with him. And especially this season, by the fact that we can finally get rid of the scenes where he's on R&R and he's barking at Klinger, I'm like, I don't like this Radar. I don't like this version of this
Yeah.
character. And if that's what they're going to do with him, now, obviously, I didn't know that at the time. The reason they were making him this way is because they knew they were getting rid of him.
Yeah.
But it's.
Which I do think is a smart, it was a smart kind of easing it out. I was still, of course, in the ideal world, he would have kind of gotten a little attitude shift and continued on. But knowing kind of the background of why Gary Berghoff wanted to leave and stuff, I think. It the way they kind of ease you into it by having him in less episodes and then also kind of a little bit of an attitude, I think it was smart. It wasn't so it wouldn't be as much of a season three situation. But I yeah, definitely, again, I think it also just depends on characters you kind of imprint on, so.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Gary Berghoff has said, God, over that it's been decades since he left, but like that he got burnt out of playing this kid and there wasn't really much development. And I could understand that. And I've heard things from people that make TV shows that say trying to change a television show while you're still making it is like trying to change a tire while the car is moving. And I can understand that, but at the same time, MASH clearly was able to develop the show and develop its characters in different ways. So it is, I would love to know why it was so difficult, if he really wanted Radar to grow and change, why it was so difficult for the writers to do that for him. Were they unwilling? Were they, who knows? You know, you would think that he would be able to say, can we finally move on a little to where I'm not playing this, gosh, you know, that kind of thing into his 30s. And why that didn't happen, I don't really know. And as a, you know, just as a meta commentary, I really don't like the "and Gary Berghoff as Radar" credit on this opening episodes of the season, because this show's an ensemble. Sure, Alan Alda is first among equals, but the show's an ensemble, and just giving one actor a special credit just sort of rubs me the wrong way. I'm just
Well, I
like,
will say the reason they do that is because he was a guest star at this point, because he
I.
was no long they're not he's no longer in the series regular, because he was
Right.
obviously he was going to be leaving. It
It
does feel
just.
weird, obviously, if you're so used to it, even though they really play Barbies with that in theme song intro and kind of cut out here and there, whatever.
Yeah.
But I that is kind of more of a I think it's more of a legal thing, just in the certain terms of like how you credit people.
Right,
But
right,
I
right.
definitely it is weird when I remember, when that season 8 started and he started being like this the guest star kind of credit thing. I was like, oh, it's so over.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely think I can understand from kind of both sides about like if it was genuinely because he wanted kind of more growth from Radar, or if it's just kind of being burnt out. I mean, it's like a lot. I mean, obviously that is your job, but I can see, I mean, it kind of, what happened to Larry Linville, where he kind of was playing this like odious character that was very much opposite from himself and kind of not wanting to be kind of pigeonholed into that. And I can see, like, empathize with Gary Berghoff being like, okay, it's been 8 years and I kind of want to do something else.
Yeah.
And I mean, and who knows how much, obviously, like, outside of it and just being like, I'm done. And like, sure, this is like, I'm getting paid probably really well, but like, it's just, and I did, it does open up, it did open up kind of room for other characters and stuff, but also with that comes again my gripe with what they did to Klinger for that kind of adjustment. Well, not to say period of adjustment, but the period of adjustment.
Yeah, I mean, and again, stepping back, the show, it's good for the show at this age, at 8 seasons, to have a change like this, just to throw in one last, like, okay, we're gonna enter in a new dynamic here where Klinger is gonna come to the fore, and we're gonna, and it's kind of amazing to think that the show ran for 3.5 more seasons in this final permutation. I mean, this is it. This is the cast until the end of the series. Which is sort of amazing to think about. Like, wow, that really ran a long time with just this group. But yeah, I mean, it's a nice jolt in energy to have a character leave at this late stage. So you know, the show's gain was sort of Gary Berghoff's loss in a sort of way. So anyway, the episode opens up with just a sequence in OR, and there's just kind of some, you know, for MASH, standard back and forth of jokes here and there. They're talking about the radio, and then the generator goes out. Just before that, though, we hear Hawkeye ask Margaret for a rib spreader. And as the lights are going out, we see Margaret in silhouette put the rib spreader into the patient. And what we don't realize is that she's jamming it onto Hawkeye's finger. And then he screams in pain. He says, "You cut my finger in the spreader. Geez." Now, I've seen rib spreaders. I don't know how your finger can get caught in a rib spreader, but okay, maybe
I
the
think maybe
doctors,
like pinched between the
I
rib and
guess.
the metal. I
Yeah.
also don't know. Also, I think he just, it's Hawkeye, so he likes kvetching about stuff. And I think this is a classic him being like, but it is about me, which I love it. It's a Hawkeye character moment where he's like, my finger hurts, so everyone needs to know. But yeah, no, I do think the rib spreader thing is like It didn't get caught in it, but like, I don't know what they're doing. It's the
I guess
dark. Who
pinched,
knows?
maybe. I again, I would the doctor, the physicians who listen to this show, please leave a comment on the website, firewaterpodcast.com, and explain how this could happen. Now, again, on a meta level, the fact that this injury has nothing to do with the plot of the
Again,
episode.
that's why I think it's just a classic Hawkeye kind of moment where they're like, we have to have him doing something in this episode.
See, but
So,
I always assumed that it's, and again, I don't know whether I'm just, this is just supposition. I'm always assuming that Alda hurt his finger in real life and they had to backfill a reason why his finger would be
Oh,
bandaged
that's
up.
interesting. Yeah.
He
I don't
just
know
somehow,
why.
who knows? He hurt his finger
I don't
doing
know.
something and
I feel like you could work around that though. Like, I don't know why his finger would have to, if you could just hide it. I guess if he had to have like a that he has that brace on, but if he had to have like a cast, I
yeah, but if
guess
he
so.
broke it
But
or something, you'd have to, Hawkeye running around with a
yeah, no, that's
cast on his
actually
finger would be
interesting. That's
kind of
probably what
noticeable.
happened.
Yeah, I just, it's always like when sometimes actors get injured and then they have to kind of retrofit it where, various actors get pregnant and all of a sudden they're wearing big,
There's
blousy
pillows
outfit, their
everywhere.
pillows everywhere. Exactly. That kind of thing. So I have no idea whether that's just a guess on my part. So we then cut to Klinger talking to Zale. Featuring Johnny Hamer making his final appearance as Zale. He will not come back to the show after this, not even in part two, which is odd. And Zale has had multiple jobs across the few seasons on MASH. I guess he works on the generator here. Now, it's kind of funny to me when Klinger says, I'm going to go check at the backup generator, right? And he opens this door to the shed. And he says, "Oh no, hey Bonzo, the backup generator's been stolen." And you see how big the generator is? I'm like, how does that fit into the other? How does the second
That's the thing, because like
generator fit?
obviously if you think about it, like what our generators look like now, it would make more sense, but I don't
Yes.
know what a backup 1950s army generator would look like. And also again, it come there's kind of this is one of the like it's the kind of B plot A plot of the story,
Yeah.
but it's weirdly it never gets resolved, and we don't you it's normally like a classic MASH storyline. It would be like someone sold it, or like they stole it. They have to go find it and get it back. It's very, I th now that you mentioned the thing about Hawkeye's finger, I wonder if they based that premise about like, oh, the lights go out, his finger gets hurt. I wonder if that was the kind of premise for that whole lights go out storyline, is that they were like, okay, how can we have a thing where he gets his finger hurt, but not too big. And then, because I wonder if they worked backwards around that, because that would make sense why they, it's like weirdly a big point of the story, but they also don't go into it. Like, I know you have to have Klinger has to be trying to find the generator and he has to go and like have and not have any success. But like, it is kind of, yeah, that is, it is an interesting kind of episode where it's like, okay, none of these plots really like have an ending. I mean, obviously it is a part two, part one, part two. So, some stuff does get resolved, but it is kind of a strange thing.
Yeah, it may just be that there's just lots of chaos and the unit's falling apart and they really need radar right at a moment when
Which
they
I
can't
think is
get him kind of thing. Yeah.
a classic thing of like radar leaves and suddenly no one knows how to do anything.
Right.
So.
Yeah, exactly. So we get a return back to the OR and we see how difficult it is. Everyone's working, basically under flashlights and things like that. And Hawkeye talks about how much his finger hurts. And then we go back to Klinger and you're right, the backup generator being a backup might just be tiny, which is why it would be able to be stolen, because if it was the size of the other one, you couldn't
They're
steal
not
it. You'd have
backing
to have
up a
10
truck,
guys
yeah.
stealing. How would that even work? So anyway, that Zale presumably fixes it, and the fix lasts for all of 2 seconds, and then the thing starts to smoke and it explodes, and they hit the dirt and Klinger says something to the effect of, well, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll step on a landmine before we have to tell Colonel Potter that the generator has blown up. So things are not great at the 477th. And then we go to this airport hangar where we find Radar eager to get back to his unit. We meet the clerk. His guy, the character's name is Olson, played by an actor, Michael O'Dwyer, born 1936, passed away in 2020. He had some great movie credits. He's in The Howling, He's in a movie called Hero with Dustin Hoffman, and one of my favorites, The Fury, which is directed by Brian De Palma, which is, in my estimation, the greatest head-exploding movie of all time. So, and he would have done that right around this time, being in The Fury. So I kind of like seeing him here. And so he explains to Radar why he's getting bumped because, again, he's General Imbrie likes to bring a cardboard cutout of himself on planes, which is such a strange detail.
Again, I do love, again, that's another thing about MASH is just the kind of that absurdity of the army and the generals. Obviously, it's a classic MASH thing, but it is the fact that they can find new ways to kind of show all the generals as like basically buffoons is really fun. That like he just has a cutout that he's gonna give to, okay, like sure.
Yeah, like what a weird, and like where would you get that made, right, in 1952
And also,
career?
like, is it a cut out, like, why does it need its own seat? Is it
Yeah,
flat? Like, I
right.
don't,
Presumably, it's just a flat
there's
piece of
so many
cardboard.
questions, so many
Is it a dummy?
questions.
Like, what is it? Like, I don't understand this. Radar tries to bribe Olsen to get him on the plane, and of course, he's only got $4 on him. And he loves. I love the way
Which,
he tries to say two now, two when you deliver. I love the way he
yeah,
tries to
which I
park it
looked it
together.
up. With the con, because I was like $4. It is 19. I mean, I'm gonna say this episode is supposed to be 1952. Obviously,
Think
you
that's
know, MASH
safe.
timeline stuff.
Yeah.
Question mark? Question mark? But I did look up how much $4 is like comparable to now using the inflation calculator. It's like $50. Like he
Okay.
wasn't like here's oh here's like you know
A
$4.
dime,
It's like
right? Yeah.
it's a decent amount of money.
Right.
So. I mean, I did think that was interesting because I always, whenever they mention money in shows that are set, you know, not now, I do like looking that up because it is like you kind of you try and guess beforehand. But yeah, he kind of, it's interesting that you know, considering how in the canon of the show, how basically you can bribe anyone for basically nothing to do
Right.
anything. It is interesting that obviously you know there's a plot reason for it, but that he turned down $50.
Yeah, it's not bad, really. It the joke is that it doesn't. It sounds like nothing in 19,
Yeah,
even
yeah,
in
yeah.
1979 money. It's like, oh, come on. But yeah, $50 is not a reasonable bribe for something so minor as that. Radar is told there's a next plane coming in 6 hours, which of course not great news. And he sits down, and we see that this hangar is empty. I mean, there's nothing to do. I mean, it's not even like it's a nightclub or a bar where you could pass some time. It's like a bus station, and there's just nothing but crates. I'm always fascinated by this kind of stuff, and because MASH didn't really have to pull out new sets a whole lot, and I would imagine that this is still an era when these movie studios and TV studios had massive lots, and they had prop departments, and they had all sorts of things. And so I imagine the MASH prop people just went to the 20th Century Fox, down the couple blocks down the lot, and grabbed some benches and grabbed a chalkboard we see, and there's some other signs. That stuff has always just been utterly fascinating to me, the whole ecosystem of movie studios, of how it was so self-contained until recently. It was so self-contained. I just love that idea of like, okay, we need six benches, we need four crates, we need that. And that's something that the MASH people didn't always have to do because most of the time the show was locked just in the 477th.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that you get some obviously classic moments of that in MASH with, you know, Klinger's outfits where they would go into the 20th century, you know, costume closet and get out all these, you know, famous starlets outfits, which I think is so cool. But yeah, I actually didn't look at it, but you know, and I think probably by now they had by this late in the show they probably had that the Officers Club was probably a set like a finished set. But I know obviously early on when they needed to have some sort of hangar or like big room, they would just use that Officers Club set and just redress it. I'm assuming by this point, you know, it was pretty set. But yeah, I mean, I assume yeah, they just kind of have like I have to put some metal up in a box and have them sit there.
A
So
trash can and some other things, the stuff you could get. So,
a trash
so
can that gets a pretty big shout out too.
yes, it does.
He yeah, we got attention is on that trash can.
So Radar is sitting there very forlorn, and then this young whack sits down and he sort of pretends like she's not there, and then they make eye contact and they start talking, and he mentions that he works at a MASH, and this young woman kind of brightens up and says, "Oh, you work in a MASH? I applied to work in a MASH, but instead I just was at Tokyo General, which is kind of like the sweetest gig imaginable, right? If you're gonna serve in the war, best to be as far away from the front lines as possible." So they start to talk, they shake hands. He calls himself Walter or Radar, first off. And then her name is Patty Haven, which is a fantastic Americana name for a character. She's played by the actress Marilyn Jones, who had relatively brief career, mostly on television. She's on shows like Twilight Zone, St. Elsewhere, V, Murder, She Wrote, and things like that. And so they talk back and forth, and then that's when they reveal that she says that she's from Missouri, and he says, "Oh, I'm from Ottumwa," and he says Ottumwa, and she knows Ottumwa, and he finds out that he says it's not even 100 miles away, which I looked up is actually wrong. Ottumwa is apparently much closer to Lancaster than 100 miles. It's actually way closer to that. So I don't know why they.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those classic things where it's just like, as with the classic continuity errors of MASH, where they're just like, eh, sounds about right, which is like, it's funny, but it's also like, I mean, Radar wouldn't have that number right off the top of his head too. So, and also I love how it's such a classic. I feel like it's a very like American thing to be like, oh, it's like only 100 miles away, And so that's something I loved about this scene that I kind of hadn't picked up again because I haven't seen this episode in so long, is that kind of when you meet people when you're abroad. I went to school in England for 3 years, and
Oh,
so
wow.
I definitely have this thing of like, yeah, when you meet someone and they're from, obviously the US is giant. So it's like, from where I am, and they're like, oh, I live in Oregon. I'm like, I'm not anywhere near there. So there is that, but that kind of thing of, oh, it's only 100 miles from me. And like, of it. And that kind of, I kind of so much related to this scene in a way that I hadn't before, just because that kind of sense of, obviously, this is also they're during a war, and kind of wanting that connection to home is even that much stronger. But I think I've kind of really, really felt with this scene and that kind of immediate bonding. And obviously, the scene goes on and they bond even more. But I did definitely thought that that was like a really cute moment, and how they instantly kind of light up.
That's a great observation. Absolutely true. Is when you're far away from home and you meet someone who is close to where you're from, you do have that kind of instant bond. I that happened. I that the first trip I ever took to California was in 1998 to go to the San Diego Comic-Con, and I went to we after the show we went to a bar, and the not the maitre d', it wasn't that fancy a place, but the host or hostess, whatever you would call that person who said, "Oh, do you want a table or whatever?" And for some reason, we had to come up about that I was from New Jersey. I think they had to look up my driver's license or something. And he said, "Oh, you're from Jersey." And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, me too." And he goes, "What exit?" And I said, "Exit four." And he knew exactly what I was talking about because New Jersey is so turnpike heavy. And it was like that was a thing him and I had, even though I never met this guy before, that we both knew, hey, we're from the state where the turnpike is like a huge thing. So.
That's definitely a thing I had. In my like first week I was in England, someone in my class was American, and I was like, oh, where are you from? And of course, basically, I mean, I'm from Connecticut, but if you're from like the New York area, you just say New York, because like no one knows. You talk to British people, they're like, New York, and they just think it's the city. They don't know that there's like a giant state attached to it. But one of my friends was like, oh, I'm from New York. And I was like, where? And like, I had to keep asking where, like, because I'm like, I know New York. And so it turns out like she lived in this town that I had like gone to school very briefly in. And like, we had only met th when we were 3,000 miles away from there. And there is that kind of
Amazing.
small world aspect of it where it's like, I would have walked past her house like every day.
Oh, that's wow.
Yeah, so that
Okay.
it's crazy. But yeah, I definitely love that kind of, the shorthand. I love like the turnpike exit where you're like, yeah, it's Jersey, so you gotta know.
Exactly. So we see Radar making time with Patty, and then he even says, "I'm sure glad that general screwed me over," which is a little more of a salty term than you would expect to come out of radar. You know,
Yeah.
just I generally wouldn't say the word. When I was a kid, I couldn't say I got screwed by
Yeah, no.
something. My parents would be like, "You don't talk like that." You know what I mean? So Raider's already feeling, or Walter at this point, he's already feeling a little like, all right, he's trying to sound a little more sophisticated around
Yeah.
this young woman. So we cut back to the 477th, and we see Hawkeye dealing with a patient in the dark, and his finger is in this splint. And then BJ's patient needs suction, but of course they don't have any because they don't have electricity. So Potter says, "We're going to wamp up a good old-fashioned hand-operated Wangenstein suction." And of course, most of us are like, "What the hell is that?" But luckily, they give us some context because they even have Father McKay say, "I've never even heard of it." So there we go.
Yeah.
Here, audience, please let's lay some pipe here. And Potter says, "Well, basically, it's just a contraption created by Dr. Owen Wangenstein, and that is going to create various fulcrums and suction pumps. It's going to create suction to be able to do the job of electric suction." So, okay. So we're seeing things are just not great at the 477. We have Klinger, and he's making calls, and he's not making any progress. And I loved at one point when he's trying to make this deal, and he's like, "I'd like to talk to General MacArthur." And then just tell him Max Klinger's on the phone. "I've been sending him love letters for a year." And then clearly they hang up on him. And he love Klinger disgustingly says, "See if he gets my vote for dictator," which
Yeah.
not as funny
Yeah.
now, but it was so
Yeah.
funny at the time.
It's one of those lines, you know. It is definitely, well, one, again, that also goes back to the kind of when the hell is this supposed to be taking place? Because obviously, very early on, there was the joke that Klinger is writing love letters to MacArthur with scandalous photos in them, too. And so, if it's only been a year, you know, when was this? But I definitely think, yeah, it's classic Klinger where he's like, I am in a dialogue with this man. But I definitely think also the fact that he's broadcasting that to, what is it, MacArthur's staff, who answer the phone. Yeah, I like this scene because, you know, obviously Colonel Potter comes in and starts, you know, like demanding answers and that Klinger hasn't gotten it yet, but he does this kind of genuine like apology for kind of, which of course then immediately he is like, get to it. But again, that's one of the things about like this episode, but also episodes earlier in the season and then after the kind of treatment of Klinger as like, you're not Radar. And just because like Radar is like really good at his job, the kind of it just it get gives me like a bad it's a bad vibe of how they treat Klinger. But I do like Colonel Potter, it was like a genuine, you know, like, listen, I know it's not your fault. And I did actually really appreciate that because I had forgotten he did that in this episode. Because obviously it can come off like, can no one else do this job? Like, obviously, like the whole point of Radar is that he's like, you know, kid genius. So he is like so capable and can do all this stuff and the kind of hand wavy ESP of it all for him. But it is kind of like, you can't, no one else can do this job.
There's no other
Like,
corporals in the entire
no other corporals, no one knows how to like, use a phone and like bribe people. Like, does seem kind of, again, that kind of suspend your disbelief, but it is like, yeah. Once Radar was gone, I mean, I also always loved Klinger, but he definitely took the place. So I definitely am like Klinger defender. So I get salty when people are mad or mean to him.
Jamie Farr has such a sweet face that it's like yelling at a
Such a sweet face.
puppy.
And again, the whole point of Klinger is like he's there to help people. Like he's trying to get home, but he will put other people ahead of himself, which obviously becomes a running theme, especially later on, towards the end of the series. But yeah, I definitely think that, yeah, I love Klinger.
So we then cut to back. We're back to the airport hangar, and we see that it's now daylight. So Radar and Patty have been talking all night, and they're kind of relating all the favorite things about you know, basically live. They're bonding over their mutual, like you were just talking about. They're bonding over their mutual background and the smell of the hay and the rain and all this kind of stuff. And we see they're even holding hands, which is nice and
Scandalous.
scandalous. And we see that his tie is loosened, like he's getting a little more comfortable. And then he brings out the big guns where he says, "Do you like grape knee high?" And she says, "I love grape knee high." Oh boy. And then it's Patty who kind of takes it further, where she says, "So what are you going to do when you get out of the service radar?" Which is, I don't know, an ever so slight kind of like, well, you know, do we have
Yeah,
maybe?
she's very forward with it, which I think is I like, obviously. But it yeah, she's very, I think very clear, and in a way that Radar seems to pick up on it in ways that obviously, previously in the show he hasn't.
Yes.
But I definitely think that yeah, it's one of those, it adds to the whole kind of soulmate situation.
Yes. Had this been me, I would have completely missed all these signs. I was
Oh,
horrible.
100%. When they're like,
Pre getting married, I missed all these signs entirely. I was
Yeah, I would
hopeless with
have
this
immediately been like, why are you talking to me on the bench?
stuff.
I'll move to a different place. Sorry.
She even says maybe someday, because he talks about his Uncle Ed and his mother, and she says maybe someday I'll meet him and your mom.
Yeah, no, she goes for it.
Full
She's
court
like, oh,
press.
like, yeah, and like that's it's, I mean, it's ballsy. I mean, it's the 1950s. I mean, obviously it's the 70s, but like the kind of, yeah, she's very forward with it in a way that I think it obviously works because it's the show, but also because it seems like that's how Radar, like it works for Radar, which I think is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she's very forward with it.
Yeah, it's very sweet. And so then Olsen barks in. He says, "Hey, I got you on a flight. Basically, I pulled some strings and I got you on a flight." And now, of course, Radar wants the opposite. And he says, "I held up a Foot Locker to make room for you. Get out there." And Radar's like, "No, I want my regular flight." And then he reverses, "I'll give you the $4 to forget the whole thing," which is when, now that you put in the context that it was $50, that's an even greater bribe to do nothing. I'll give you $50 to do nothing. That's even better.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, it's in a kind of, again, this guy just does not, he weirdly went out of his way then, if he like bumped a Foot Locker, to get Radar on this thing, but still like doesn't care enough to take $50. Like it's
Right.
yeah. Sure. I mean, again, just unhelpful at all levels.
I love that he calls Radar lover boy, which means
Yeah.
Olsen's kind of been listening to this
Oh,
conversation
of
for the
course.
last
He has one of
5
those
hours or
old
whatever.
timey like listening horns. Yeah.
I don't know the details of what it's like in service life. The people who listen to the show that are veterans, again, you can please explain it to me. But like, I know they established that Olsen is a lieutenant, which means he is an officer, which means he is above Radar straight up. But like, he orders Radar to go out there, and I'm always like, but I know that he's a lieutenant, and I guess if someone's above you in rank, that trumps everything. But at the same time, I'm like, does he have the authority to tell Radar what to do? I mean, Radar's commanding officer is Colonel Potter, not this guy. I don't know. I mean,
Yeah,
again, maybe
I
I'm,
think
it
the
doesn't matter.
implication is that if he doesn't take this flight, he's not getting on the next one, which I don't know how accurate that would also be. But I feel like that was kind of the vibe
Maybe
of
so.
like,
Maybe so.
yeah.
It's this or nothing kind of thing. So,
Yeah.
Radar sits down and he goes, "Damn, I mean, shoot." So there you go. Again, this is.
Which that's the thing, because you mentioned earlier how he says like the general screwed me over, but then here he kind of softens the language. So it is interesting that, that line kind of they just brushed over it.
Yeah. So like I said, this is a radar that we're relatively unfamiliar with. So they talk about that maybe they can get back together at some point later on. And then he gets up and then he stops and turns and gives Patty a very nice kiss. And there's a nice little bit of physical action going. I don't know if that's the right term, but there's a nice bit of acting going on the part of Marilyn Jones, is because they kiss and it's a very gentle, sweet kiss. And then he stops and she remains in place. The camera pans to where she's in profile, and the kiss is not mutually ended, I guess is what I'm saying. It's he ends it and he backs away, she remains in the same exact physical space that she was because she does not want the kiss to end. And I think that's a nice little moment from the actor to kind of do that, as opposed to both people separating at the same time. She's, you know, she really likes Radar.
And I think it is the thing of because he's the one like physically leaving that scene that I think that works.
It's sweet. I really like it. So then Radar, she waves, she looks very sad. She waves goodbye and Radar walks out, and that is the end of the act break. And then we come back and we see that now the food back at the 47th. Seventh is going bad, and so instead of throwing it out, everyone is loading up their trays with pounds and pounds of food. We see the food looks even less appetizing than normal when it's stacked this high. I don't know about you, but when you find food in giant mass quantities, it always seems a little less appetizing. I don't know, maybe that's just me, but like I used to have a friend that would go to like BJ's Wholesale and buy a jar of mayonnaise the size of a small bucket, and I was just always like, oh, I don't know. There's something about seeing
I
food.
think for me, it would be the fact that it's mayonnaise. It's just like that's you no one needs that much mayonnaise. But yeah, definitely there's a kind of I feel like there's the sense of like part of this is already bad. Like in the with the you know the obviously it's mash food, so you know it's already probably bad too. But the kind of there's the fact that there's so much of it definitely gives that thing of like, I don't know about this, which obviously all the characters are equally as skeptical.
So Winchester tries to go lean on it,
Oh, it's so funny.
and then he's and then Klinger Potter says, and aside of everything else, lean heavy on the halibut patties. And Winchester goes, no, I despise halibut patties. And look, I don't know about you, I've been a vegetarian for more almost 30 years, so and I didn't even eat fish when I did eat meat. But like halibut patty sounds so disgusting.
I mean, I'm also a vegetarian and have been
Oh,
for a
are
really
you?
long time. So it's like the kind of, yeah, and I also never liked fish. So I mean, just the, just something, anything in a patty, it's like, I don't know. Also, I mean, it's the army too. So that halibut ain't fresh and
No.
it's like, it's not new. Oh, and it must smell so bad. Yeah, it's
Oh,
just
it sounds
not good all
so
around.
awful. Oh,
But there is
God.
that really funny kind of physical comedy of Charles starts spooning the
Spooning
stuff
it
off of his
back.
tray. And then Goldman, is his name Goldman? I can never remember.
Goldman, yeah,
He,
Goldman,
yeah, Goldman starts like with tongs, starts putting it back on as Charles is taking it off. There's that one of those really funny, like it's not in like focus, but that's also going on,
It's a great bit of
which I
physical
think is
comedy.
that's great. Yeah.
I love it. And so then we see Zale shows up for a moment, talks to Potter, and he says, hey, the locals are here, and we see this mad rush of locals, Korean locals coming in, and of course they are not going to quibble about the food, and they are stacking their trays up, a mile high full of stuff because to them this is amazing, and it's kind of nice. So you're like, okay, at least they're doing, like. That's one of the other reasons why you love Colonel Potter. Now, maybe this is SOP, but like I like the idea that they put the word out to the locals, like, hey, free food. Like, we're not just gonna throw it out. We'd rather give it to you people. I think that's a nice little detail.
Yeah, it's a nice detail, but also I think again goes back to kind of, you know, obviously some episodes do more than others, but the kind of, you know, there's that great scene then when the people start sitting down and of course Hawkeye is and BJ are, you know, picking at the food and stuff and then seeing that these people who are like starving and their country is torn apart by war and stuff and realizing like okay we're complaining about the food but these people if they want the food and that kind of bringing it back I think is something that happens often in MASH and is just really important obviously for the for it not to just be like another oh this is just set during war but it's like kind of again that those grounding moments are you know very common in MASH and I think that's why like, another reason why the show is just so good it does bring you back to that.
Yeah, I like they take that moment, right? To Hawkeye and BJ complain about the food, and then they see that the locals are shoveling it down because they're starved, and then Hawkeye he lifts his tray, well, he lifts his fork and then slides the tray over to the younger girl that sits down in front of him. It's a nice little, yeah, you said it's a nice moment for them to take time to give the main two characters of the show this little moment here of getting to do that. So we then find Radar in a Jeep, and he's getting driven back to the unit. The guy driving the Jeep is Sergeant LeGros. He's played by Tony Cristino, born 1936, died 2002. Bunch of TV credits like Columbo, Barnaby Jones, Cannon. This is his last credit. Last acting credit is this episode of MASH. So Sergeant LeGros is sort of like, "What, God, why are you in such a hurry to get back? That seems kind of strange." And, well, okay, whatever. And then they come across three GIs, and they're like, "Hey, can basically give us a list, give us a lift." So the three actors playing the playing the GIs, there's the characters are Private Hoff, Forster, presumably Private, and Private Roos. Those all four names, LeGros, Hoff, Forster, and Roos, are all Dodgers pitchers.
Oh,
And we
yeah.
know that writer Ken Levine, huge baseball fan. He's actually done baseball play-by-play, so guaranteed that's his little details that they're names of old pitchers. I wasn't able to tell. A lot of these actors don't have IMDb profile pictures, so I'm not able to determine which actor is talking versus who is who. But Private Hoff is played by Arel Blanton, born 1943, passed away in 2018. A lot of TV credits, Knight Rider, Melrose Place. He's in a great bad movie called The Swarm about killer bees. Forster is played by Sean Fallon Walsh, born 1934, died 2000. TV credits, Dallas, Barnaby Jones, the great movie Blue Collar. And then Private Roos, played by John St. Elwood. He was in a lot of great movies. Repo Man, the cult classic Repo Man, 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy, Against All Odds with Jeff Bridges, and a TV movie called The Child Stealer, which sounds absolutely amazing. It sounds really grim. So they all want to get a ride, and of course, Radar is like, "Well, there's not enough room," and he decides, being Radar, to jump out. Now it's weird because we see that there is no one sitting in the front seat. Like, it's just
No
sit in
one's
the
sitting in
front,
the front
Radar.
seat. Like he take when he takes his duffel bag too. It's like, okay, well now that front seat is open. And all three of the GIs got in the back seat, which is weird, again, considering like first of all it's a duffel bag, so just sit on top of it. But like, yeah, it's really they were like, okay, we're in, bye. Which is like it's interesting because also where was the Jeep, like the guy driving the Jeep originally going? It seems like he would be driving, like specifically driving Radar back to the 407 Seventh, but like I guess now he's just driving these guys, so
Yeah, I mean,
who's
like,
to say?
I guess, like, how much is out there that you couldn't just drop, right? It doesn't, I mean, it's just the plot contrivance, it's fine. But yeah, when I see that them drive off, and I'm like, when he, as you said, he picks up the duffel bag and there's just his rifle sitting there, I'm like, well, just sit in the front, Radar. What are you doing? I don't understand, but okay, whatever. It slows things down, which gives the 477 even a chance to be worse. So we cut back and we see that they have set up the Wangenstein suction thing, and Colonel Potter explains how it works, and there's like a chipped beef can, and the material collects in there, and it drains the whole thing. Just sort of explains. Klinger shows up and feeling very sorry for himself, and says, "I wasn't able to find a generator," but then they hear that Radar has arrived, and he's being driven into the unit by a character played by Richard Song, the great Richard Song, who played like a dozen different episodes of MASH, all playing different characters. Always funny every time. This
Always
guy was
funny.
always great. And he gives Radar some back adjustments, which is basically just jerking his neck and almost
It
breaking
was
his
like
spine.
pseudo like a chiropractor thing, but I don't know, that angle seemed a little skeptical.
And then he says that'll be $4, which of course is the $4
Again,
that Radar has.
$50.
$50 for that's a lot for a on the field adjustment. But okay, yeah, Richard Lee Sung never missed that guy. So everyone comes running out and they're so excited, and they don't really understand why Radar seems so cranky. Because, they're like, what the hell? Like, it's really very atypical kind of Radar. And they don't even let him get a shower. Because, of course, he's
Well, there's
covered
a
in perfume because his bag got thrown on him and the perfume broke open.
There's that great line where after being like, oh, like, because obviously it's perfume, like, chasing like ladies in Tokyo. And then he goes, it was four guys that got me to smell like this. And then Colonel Potter goes, as long as you had a good time.
See, so open-hearted, Colonel Potter, right? You know?
Oh, it's just one of those just classic lines. So I love that.
A lot of dumber and cheaper shows would have had a, you can imagine what kind of line they might have had,
Oh, of course.
right?
But
But
again,
no.
that's the thing about MASH is like they don't need to explain out their jokes or kind of go too far. It's like this offhanded comedy that is just so like naturally funny. And again, that's also one of the things what makes it like so great is that just like, yeah, that's just the end of that. Like there's not digs. It doesn't go like deeper. It's not done in bad faith or anything. So I think
That's
but
a great
it's
way of
also
putting it.
classic because it's radar too, which is
Yeah.
really funny.
I like that phrase. That's you've done not being done in bad faith. Like that's a terrific way of putting it. So they basically strong arm Radar into getting right to work, which I can imagine would be a little irritating. You've had a long flight, and of course he's got Patty on the mind and stuff like that. At the same time, he has been on R&R for like 6 months, it seems like. I mean, come on, man, get back to
Yeah.
work. What do you do? Like, you get more time off back from your R&R, but okay, that's fine. He comes into his office and he sees that Klinger has absolutely rendered
He
it.
shambolized
You
it.
shambolized it. And that is the one area where Klinger has no excuse. There's no reason to do what you've done. You may not know what you're doing, but you don't have to just leave files all over the place. Now, come on, Klinger, what are you doing? He takes off his hat, and we do see, not to be, I don't know, not to be mean about it, because Lord knows I haven't had hair for many years, but we see that Radar's hairline is way further back than what it would be for a 19-year-old.
Well, I mean that has obviously been a, since the beginning, because he's playing a 19, 20-year-old, but I think it does kind of it adds to it obviously the fact that that like Gary Berghoff isn't a 19-year-old, but it is that funny thing of like, I mean the amount of stuff he's doing, I also would be losing hair. Like it just seems like or at least going gray, but that is always a funny thing. I mean, obviously he wears a cap for most of, the early seasons and stuff. So you kind of don't see it, but when you do see it, it's like, yeah, that is not a 19-year-old man.
No. So he calls Sparky and he talks about, we need a generator. And he says, oh, he says, this is a three-call finagle. And he even says, I'll let you have an inflatable wading pool. I got a neat collection of Spike Jones records. He's just basically offering kind of what they have lying around. And then he says, oh, I can give you a really sexy smelling duffel bag. And he's sort of like, basically like, this is a fait accompli. This deal, And then what do you mean? What do you mean? No, it's not a deal. There's got to be a generator around somewhere. And this Radar is finding out. Klinger's, obviously bad at his job, but not as bad as he thought. Because even he can't get a generator, so we're in bad shape here. So we see night has fallen. Radar shows back up to the O Club, and he's even pissier. And he, Klinger's like, "What do you mean you couldn't get one? Even you failed." And then the grape knee-high is warm, of course, because there's no ice. So Radar is just absolutely in the
Not a
most
good day.
miserable, miserable mood. So then we go to the swamp. Hawkeye is obsessing over his finger. He shoves it. He shoves it in. BJ's not taking it seriously. And then
BJ does not
he
care.
shoves it in BJ's face. He says, there could be broken blood vessels in there, loss of circulation, leading BJ to have a wonderful retort. When are your parents coming for you?
Like, come pick me up.
No sympathy at all for that. Which it's a great joke when these two can goof on one another when it's been established that Hawkeye's mother is no longer living. That could be deemed a little insensitive, but it's obviously meant to be just ridiculous that when your parents coming for you.
I mean, I think it adds to the whole thing of like that wouldn't be possible anyway, because like obviously, so I think that kind of adds to it. But yeah, no, the kind of thing of it just adds to the fact that this is like just a very weird injury that they're like drawing focus to, but also not explaining, which is very funny again from the earlier part where we were talking about how maybe it was, kind of revolved around the fact that Alan Alda like hurt his finger.
So Colonel Potter comes in and he tells them that he got a wire from Radar's mother that their uncle, his uncle Ed, passed away, and that is the act break of the episode. Now it comes back, and you know, normally, of course, the sort of bumper scene is like 45 seconds, 1 minute. This is almost 3 minutes because they've just paced it a little differently because they have to give the scene a little more of a he's got a little more meat on it because this is the conclusion, and obviously they know this is part one of the thing, and we see that it's the, you know, obviously all night they've been up. I love that Mulcahy is in on this. I think
I
that's
think that,
great.
yeah, that kind of it speaks to one, this kind of, support system that Radar clearly has, but also kind of a, from the, spiritual side of it. Like, I think it's mentioned, obviously they don't really show it, but that Radar is religious. So I think that kind of having him there makes sense, one, just from a, the kind of the ensemble of it all, but also, kind of course he would be there because he feels like he should be.
Yeah. It's and they, you know, they've established they were genuine friends. You know, him and Mulcahy were genuine friends. So yeah, it makes sense. It's just it's for the Mulcahy was probably an easy character to leave out. And so when they include him,
Yeah,
I
so
always
they're
think
like,
it's
oh, he can
nice.
be here.
You know, so it's great. So Radar comes out of Potter's office. Again, that's a nice detail. I kind of like that Potter's letting Radar have some privacy. In his all, you know, letting him use his office to have this phone call with his mother. And then Radar comes up and he's kind of by the body language, he's kind of constantly got his back turned towards everybody. It's kind of a nice camera blocking by Charles Dubin where Radar is kind of, and he's moving very stiffly and he's kind of giving very terse answers. And he says, Uncle Ed's funeral is tomorrow. Everyone in Ottumwa is going to be there. Well, except me. And then he says, you know, it's not going to be easy for your mother to run the farm by herself. And he says, well, you know, he says she's got some high blood pressure. And he says, yeah, arthritis too, but she'll manage. And, you know, and he's kind of jotting things down. And then he says, the Mulcahy says, quite a woman, your mother. And then BJ says, it takes after her son. And they ask Radar, are you all right? And he's like, well, you know, I guess I gotta be. And then he gets up and again, he turns his back towards everybody, starts filing something. And then it's Colonel Potter who drops the metaphorical bomb here. And he says, you're going home. And Radar's like, what? And he says, go get yourself a DA-7 hardship discharge and put your name on it. And Radar is like, what? You know, stunned. And, you know, Potter says, your mother's a strong woman, but she's not going to make it alone. You need to be there with her. And they all stand up and they say, you're right. You've heard him right, Radar. Your time has come. And they all shake his hand. And there's this zoom in on him where he says, Hawkeye says, I'm very happy for you, Radar. And Radar says, I'm happy for me too, I guess. And then we get our to be continued. So that's
And you
Radar,
get
Goodbye Radar,
that
part
the
one.
f initial kind of silent credit part, which you always know is that's a gut punch there. It's either the silent credits. I mean, obviously after the couple first ones, then the music kicks in, but it's either the silent credits or the sad MASH theme that they do at the end of heavy episodes, which is always just like, oh, really? Like, oh, now we're all depressed. But yeah, no, I definitely think one of the things he mentioned, Radar mentions, obviously that, he's like the man of the family now. And again, not to go back to, continuity stuff, because obviously they didn't care, so why should we? But it is interesting because obviously, like, he's mentioned to have, over various siblings over various, of various different sorts and stuff. And kind of it is interesting to, to think about, even if those are true or whatever, that, it still he does have some kind of burden, because obviously if his mom is on the farm all by herself, which also is questionable if it was just his mom and Uncle Ed, how they kind of manage that, how big is the
Yeah, how
farm,
is that
all
even
those things that
possible?
I'm interested in, because it's like Radar, but really don't, hold anything for the actual like show. But it does, I mean, I think the kind of when it closes zooms in on his face and stuff and how he's like happy, but that kind of bittersweetness. And I kind of I part of it obviously is because, depending on when this is supposed to be, when he goes home and stuff. I mean, I know it's pretty it's somewhat established. I can't remember if it was the book or in the show, but like that he was 19 when he got there. So he's spent, like, obviously, the kind of he's spent 2/8 years at the 4077th. I definitely think that kind of he's going back, obviously, to his parents, but this kind of thing that, of course, they all go through, at the end of the show of like going home. What does that mean when you're like your home is also with these people? And also, the last time, well, not the last time, because obviously Frank, but no one really cared about that. But like, the last time someone went home, what happened? And I think that I always, in my mind, that also made it worse for me, the episode, thinking of like, of him thinking about Henry and like when he's getting to go home and stuff. And I like to make myself feel bad. So that was definitely, that's my chosen method of doing that for this episode. But yeah.
I do. We talked about it last season. I thought, Radar didn't get much to do in season 7, which again probably had to, lead to why Gary Berghoff wanted to leave. In many ways, my favorite moment for the character all of season 7 was in the clip show, was in the Our Finest Hour, where they ask everybody, what's your one, what's a memory you have of this place? And it's Radar who says, one day, one very bad day. And that leads to the clip part from the Abyssinia Henry episode. And that's such a, I mean, we know that that's always loomed large on the character because it's come up in a couple different times, but it hadn't come up in a while. And I just thought it was very interesting that Radar would, that was the thing he immediately went to of that's one of, that's what, that's his preeminent memory of his time in Korea is that day. And I just thought, well,
I mean,
that's,
I
this
think
haunts him to this moment,
it speaks to, again, one, because he's younger and how Henry was very much a father figure to him, and also
Absolutely, yeah.
because of his position as clerk, how he worked closer with Henry than everyone
Yes.
else. And I think that definitely it makes sense that, that would be the kind of thing. But again, also the fact that, like, I think Radar's arc over the series is, he goes from, well, weirdly in season 1, it, we there's a lot of they kind of character work, they were working out stuff in season 1 that then kind of gets forgotten about, like, Radar smoking a cigar and drinking in season 1 versus, everything else in the rest of the series. But his kind of arc is him, going into the war as a child and obviously leaving, having grown up. Obviously, there's a lot more like very explicit symbolism, especially in the next part with that. But I think, yeah, the kind of thought that he obviously, I mean, the whole Henry thing, again, when you think of what the timeline of the show is, who knows how many this is, it's only been like 8 months since Henry died or something, you know what I mean? So it is, but I definitely think, like, yeah, having him be the one to carry that, I think, adds to a lot of the rest of his character, in the sense of he like, and also going back to Radar's like unexplained ESP vibes. So, but I just, yeah, I definitely I love Radar, and I don't want to say goodbye to Radar, so I will never watch this next part. I mean, I probably will again, but not right now. No.
You'll have to watch it when the episode of the podcast airs, so you can be up
Yes,
to
I know.
date.
I guess I'll have to.
I am curious as to why this was done as a two-parter as opposed to a 1-hour show, because all the other two-part shows had been 1 hour. The Our Finest Hour originally aired as an hour, and Fade Out, Fade In was an hour, and Bug Out was an hour, and it was Welcome to Korea. This was broken up over two distinct episodes. I'm sort of curious as to why that would be. I know this was done, moved to later in the season because of they wanted to get the ratings spike. And maybe they figured by spreading it over 2 weeks, they're getting the ratings spike for 2 weeks as opposed to just 1 week. But I would love to know why this was broken up in a way that the other ones really hadn't, to this point.
Yeah, I bet it was about ratings, and I bet it was about probably, yeah, just that kind of suspense of like tune in next week to see, but obviously that is a sweet kind of thing,
Okay, well, that's again, that is Goodbye Radar Part 1. So what is your favorite line or joke from this episode?
I mean, it has to be it was four guys that got me to smell like this. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. But I do also like you shambolized it because I
Okay.
love the kind of radarism of that. Yeah.
My favorite is I purposely left it out of the synopsis because I just wanted to get to it here. And it's when Potter is when Margaret and Winchester are in line for the food,
Oh,
and
yeah.
Potter says, "Come on, Margaret." She says, "How do you expect me to eat all this?" And he says, "Come on, Margaret, I can always count on you to pack it away."
Yeah.
And of course,
And
Margaret
he's like,
goes,
but of course you keep your
"What?"
girlish figure.
Yeah, and
I mean, just
he.
an insane line, but okay. Like, but,
As much as I
yeah.
love that, right? Because his recovery of yet you still maintain that girlish
Yeah.
figure, and Margaret is barely mollified, and she's like, "That's better." That part is funny, but the part that makes me laugh even more is when you watch that back and forth. Watch Winchester, because he hears it and he looks at Potter with this wonderfully bemused look on his face of like, "I can't wait to see how he gets himself out of this
Oh,
one."
I bet.
It's
Yeah.
so great on David Ogden Stiers' part because it's just like it's that moment where you've had someone you know has said something really stupid and you're not
Yeah.
involved. You can just
Yeah,
stand and watch it, and it is kind of wonderfully. It's you got a bit of Schadenfreude to watch this person
I'll
get
definitely
out of
look out
this,
for
and
that.
it's Stiers really is. You see him react like, "Oh my God, I can't believe Potter just said that," and then he's just kind of like, "Oh, let's see how this plays out." So good. I love it so
Yeah, that's
much.
great.
But I mean, come on, Pot. I can always count on you to pack it away. Like, I've
Mean,
only been
it's just
married
like,
for a couple of
what a
years, but I
violating
know
thing to say
you
to
do
someone.
not say that. You don't say it to anybody, but especially a woman. Don't say it to a woman. It's not a good idea. So,
Crazy, yeah.
yeah, for an episode that's very serious and doesn't have a lot of jokes, kind of on purpose, that one always makes me laugh very hard of just. What a great and then also when Margaret goes, "That's better," you see Potter roll his eyes like, "Whew!" It just
Like, oh,
comes
I got out of that one. Like,
so good.
yeah.
I love it. So, well, Lily, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolutely delightful
Yes.
conversation. I loved all the your origin stories for you and your
Yep.
parents about getting in a match. It's fantastic stuff. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Do you want to tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
I mean, I guess I'll drop my mash blur. If anyone I know in real life in the outside world is listening to this, you do not hear any of this. My mash blur is a Radar's Menagerie. And I my other thing is I have a mash project going on Substack called the Dear Mash 1975 project, where I basically obviously the as you would know, after the Abyssinia Henry episode aired in 1975, people wrote in letters from all over the country and about being livid that Henry was no longer on the show. And when the show wrapped, those letters were given to the Smithsonian, where I in a classic move of me being crazy, requested to see them from the archives, took pictures of many of them that were written by children, and I've been contacting those children and asking them about them. So I kind of did interviews with them and then wrote them up, and on my Substack, you can read the interviews.
Amazing. That's an
It's
amazing it's
really
amazing on
fun.
the amount of work, just the amount of nerdiness you put into that require is required to do something like that. It's that's that and then that's inventive as all get out to think to come at it from that angle. That would never be anything I would have considered. That's just
Yeah, it was kind of.
remarkable.
I also was not expecting to do it. I just kind of wanted to see the letters because I was already going to be at the Smithsonian doing research stuff. And I was like, hey, while I'm there, I want this box from blah, blah, blah. which, shout out to archivists. You can do that because they're really, really nice. And so I got to see these letters. And when I was flipping through them, I noticed that a lot of the letters were from like kids. And it really just got me. And so I was like, you know what? Because these, I, have my methods of tracking people down that So I don't like dox people. I don't say, but I mean, if you know how to use the internet, you know how to use the internet. But yeah, tracking people down and not, they don't have, so, I mean, obviously everyone remembers writing the letters, but they don't know that they're in the Smithsonian. And so I think
Right.
that is a really cool thing to tell people that, like, hey, this letter you wrote when you were like 11 is like in like the archives of
A
like
historical
the
archive,
museum.
yeah.
Yeah. And it's just having the conversations with people about what MASH means to people. Obviously, that's what you do on the podcast. But what MASH means to you, and how, you know, kind of TV impacts you as a child, and how that kind of communal, like how communal TV was at that time, how that, you know, impacts people. And then when something big happens, like the Abyssinian Henry episode, how that kind of imprints on children. I mean, my mom, again, this is another thing my parents always told me, is that, like, to my mom, she was like, that episode like scarred a generation of for a lot of, because for a lot of kids and a lot of the people I've talked to, it's like that was their first like brush with loss in that way. And because, you know, you sit down with your family at the TV and, you know, watch MASH together as a family, and they're your family from the TV, and it's like losing a member of the family. And so that's just something, because that's how I felt watching that episode, which that's a whole other story. So I think, you know, kind of hearing people talk about that and how they, of course, still remember it so vividly, you know, 50 plus years now. Well, it was 50 years this March. And so, yeah, it's just been a really fun project, and I just really like talking to the people and seeing who still loves MASH and who was just like, yeah, I don't know. And there's a whole, yeah, it's cool. I kind of, you know, it's sometimes harder to get some of the interviews out, but I'm trying to keep chugging on with it. I think there's four up right now.
It's amazing. That's is absolutely amazing piece of, you know, again, what a way to approach MASH fandom in such a, you know, unique way. That's just that's remarkable. Good on you for doing something like that.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming on. It was just absolutely marvelous to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find me over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. You can find all the back episodes of the podcast on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. And if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, please go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice for just $5, right? Which is not $50. It's actually five in 19 in 2025 money.
Which
You
is
can.
good. It's a good deal.
It's a good deal. You can be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Rich Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. Thank you so much for your support of MASHcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening again. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Colonel, permission to let you down.
I don't want to hear it.
Then I'll just cry on your buttons. There's not a generator to be had any place. Please, just label me a failure and let me live out my life in peaceful shame.
I haven't been this moved since Heidi.